encourage you guys to continue this thing. Honestly, I think it's a gift to the industry. I loved your post that 2024 should be the year of unreasonable hospitality. I think it absolutely should. I mean, just if we could all do one thing a week, we could really change the way some of us are running our companies now.
All right there, Scott, how's it going?
It's a beautiful day today. Daylight savings time is here. Mm-hmm. I haven't gotten to ride my bike for the first time yet. I had forgotten one very critical piece of the puzzle, and that's I have a 5-year-old and a 3-year-old, and time change is rough. So yeah, I had big plans to jump right back on the bike, and not yet. Today in our family, so typically I'm up between 4:30 and 5 every morning and I do all my things. Apparently dad is struggling with time change too, because I didn't get up today until 7:15. And then which sent our entire house into being late this morning. So time change is here, which is glorious. And I hope my first ride on the bike is tomorrow. We'll be up by it. So things are good.
Yeah. I don't know who invented this. I'm not a fan of them, whoever they were, to be honest with you. And shout out to our guest today, who's actually come on the podcast properly, because not only have they invented this ridiculous system called daylight savings times, they don't even do it consistently. So like some countries do it at different times than the US, some states within the US don't do it. It's a mess. I don't like it. Adam, what's your reaction to daylight savings time and how are you doing? What's going on?
I'm doing great. I enjoy the extra hour, but like the rest of us, that time change is definitely not easy, especially with 4 kids in the house. So I don't know how accurate this is, but I did hear, because my inclination, I think a lot of people's is, oh, well, it has to do with farming. Apparently, this was started in Germany to save oil during war times. They figured that if they adjusted the time, then they'd use less oil. I don't know if that's accurate or not, but I'm with you, Conrad. Let's just get consistent and let's just keep our days as long as they can be. But the benefit of the daylight savings time on my side is that we can now move outside for soccer practices. So to tie in a quick sports update, we haven't caught up in maybe a week or two here. We won our indoor championship, undefeated for the season. So we're headed off into the outdoor season. Unfortunately, last week was a rainout from a tournament, but this week we've got another tournament coming up. So I've got practice coming up. We're moving outside. We're starting to focus a little bit more on the preparation of a full-sided game. Indoor small. It's like 6 people compared to a larger 11-sided game. So as I'm preparing for this, I'm starting to think about positions a little bit more. The boys are going to be in high school next year. And I'm starting to get to a point where they are specializing a little bit more. Now, I'm still a believer in generalization. I'm still a believer in cross-training. I want to see people play a lot of different spots, not only on the field, but also different sports. But I've got to get a little bit more fine-tuned as I prep for these tournaments and I proceed a little bit. And it led me to start thinking about today's discussion, because I was in the smart home space with Point Central back in 2012. And as I was looking at Neil's background, I recognized that Minute, which I might be pronouncing incorrectly. So Neil's, I'll let you correct the pronunciation, was starting right around that time. And it wasn't on my radar. And as I started to think through this, I started to recognize that they took a different path. And it's more of a path of that specialization where they chose these products to go really deep in. Whereas my exposure to that smart home space was a little bit more widespread, where you start to think about all of this ecosystem. And Conrad, you made me think about this with your post on LinkedIn, talking about an ecosystem and how all these different pieces are connected on a marketing side. Well, the same applies on the smart home side and how all these pieces are going to connect, not only within the infrastructure of that smart home, but also within the infrastructure of the business itself. So I'm really interested to talk with Niels. He was a recommendation from Nico over at Bob W. at the beginning of the year. So Bob W. has deployed this at a wide scale. And that's one of the questions that I've always had, not only about sort of this industry, the vacation rental industry, how well do we scale, but also on the smart home devices. How well do those scale? How does this really work when you start to think about that ecosystem and how they all connect? I've got some opinions on it, but I've also been out of that space for probably 6-7 years. So I know the technology has advanced quite a bit in that time, but I still see there's challenges in trying to get all of these pieces together. And when one part of that ecosystem, to the point of your LinkedIn post, Conrad, when one part of that ecosystem goes down, how does it then impact the rest of that? Now, how do we think about that from the scale and what the benefits are from the guest, from the operator, from the homeowner perspective? So this should be a good one.
Yeah, I like that prompt. That's a good way for us to dive into it. Well, Nils, welcome. We appreciate you hopping on today. I made a joke, of course, about you getting daylight savings times right because you're not based in the US. So maybe you could give a little background for the listener, maybe who doesn't know you, maybe they know your company, but just a little bit of background of you, Minute, what you're focused on today, where you're based, where you're calling in from. And yeah, we can dive into it.
Yeah, I was blissfully unaware that it was daylight savings time today. And I'm based in London and I would be
very happy with keeping the time consistent. And if we could keep it GMT for everyone as well, with none of these time changes, that would be fantastic. I can also sympathize with Scott. I have a 2-year-old at home and a slight deviation to the schedule. And then you have a worse morning than you need to be. So I'm with you all the way there. But yeah, so my name is Nils. I grew up in Sweden, as you can probably tell. And then I spent a lot of time in California. I moved to work for Apple in Cupertino after university. And spending too much time in San Francisco, eventually sort of you have a startup that is sort of erupting around you, whether you intend to or not. And for me, like it was very much that sort of that ecosystem and seeing other people trying their wings doing it that was inspirational for me. And it so happened, actually, you know, I was more interested to start a startup rather than having like a specific interest in the short-term rental space. But it happened that I ran into one of the very early employees at Airbnb, and he was telling me how they had these issues with the people, even in the early days, putting up cameras in the listings. And I had worked with some computer vision style projects at Apple and sort of saw an opportunity to create something that could preserve guest privacy while still offering some of the benefits that a camera would. And that was actually the origin of the company. And then we've been on a long journey since that. But I think it'll be interesting to hear Adam's reflection a little bit deeper on like how Point Central would have taken a different turn. Because I think when we were starting out in those days, for us, it was more like 2014 or 2015. There was so much opportunity and you could have taken so many different ways. And it's always interesting for me to hear people who were at the similar point and then took different paths where you sort of ended up after a while.
Mm-hmm. I did a bad job hosting, Nils. I'm sorry. There's a lot of context there I want to dive into. And I don't know if you were prompted beforehand. We may not have triggered you on this one, but you also need a song that best describes you. We've got the Spotify playlist and we're adding songs to it. So we need a song too.
I was prompted. I didn't get that. And good thing you warned me, because otherwise I would have been thinking forever on the podcast and that would make bad content. But I landed on Young Folks by Peter, Björn and John, which is a small Swedish band, but it had some success in the US. And first I was sort of like thinking about, you know, what's a song about an entrepreneur who is sort of combining family life and running a business. And turns out there are not so many songs around that. And if there are, they don't end very well. But I like Young Folks because it speaks a little bit about the journey and the perseverance that you sort of need in a similar journey. So I enjoyed that. So add that to your playlist.
Right on.
I love that one. I didn't realize that they were Swedish, but that's a fantastic addition.
Nice. Also, well, Nils, you went over it very quickly, but my first question is actually about Apple, because you mentioned working on things that were like camera technology, but not exactly camera technology. And then, of course, they've just released this Apple Vision Pro some time ago. Now, it looks like on your LinkedIn, you left there some time ago, 2013. But like, can you say generally what you were working on at that time? It sounded like you weren't working on like these things that we're used to, the phones, like maybe that more standard technology. Is anything you could share that you were working on that related to what they're doing today with like Vision Pro, like that whole world? Or did it relate more to what you're doing today with Minute, those sorts of things?
Well, so I was in a very early stage team that looked at how you could apply different technologies across the product lines. So we weren't working on a specific product like the Vision Pro or anything like that. But it was more about building platforms that the product teams could then build interesting products from. And part of that was sensors that would go into of anything you could carry with you, essentially. And I did a few different types of projects. And fortunately, I can't much about that time still. I mean, it's a long time ago. But since it was such an early stage of the product development, a lot of the things have actually still not come out, and maybe they never will.
Interesting.
And obviously I have no insight since having been out there for 10 years now. But it was a really good training ground. And I was very sort of lucky to be a good company at a really good time when there was a lot of things developing. And where, of course, it wasn't just the iPhone. It was like the iPad and the Apple Watch. There was a lot of products that were sort of shaped around that time. So I got a lot of exposure and I've been able to put some of the things to use, I hope, in creating Minute.
Yeah, nice. I like that. Well, you mentioned, Adam alluded to this a second ago when he talked about ecosystem. Scott, I was going to go your direction because maybe we're going to dive into the specifics of technology, how these platforms and tools and hardware works. But Scott, on the operations side, maybe we'll start there. Like all this stuff has to be practical and useful for the operations person to like understand. And if they log into 10 different systems or go to 5 different places, that can become problematic. So what's kind of your view on like smart home tech, not for like the function it provides, but how it's actually like to use that those tools day to day when managing 1200 plus units?
Yeah, I mean, for us, it changed everything, right? I mean, for us, it was Point Central really pushed us ahead. I mean, you know, chasing keys around was legitimately 2 and 3 people's full-time jobs. I mean, and every year, sometimes twice a year, it would be trying to get everyone together to do a key audit, right? And I'm saying it in air quotes. It was like this terrible, painful thing. But just the ability to be able to help people from the phone. And Adam and I, in all those years, like we met up here in the Point Central or the alarm.com house to see all this stuff. And we had ideas, and Adam and I were really pushing into it. Like, I wanted a temperature sensor for the refrigerator, right? Mm-hmm. And I wanted Point Central to be able to tell me what temperature the refrigerator is, because what we all know is family, you know, and we say in the station wagon, right? They're on the way down to vacation. They load up the car full of groceries. They get there. They put all the groceries in the refrigerator. And then they call you an hour later and say, hey, the beer is still cold, right? The refrigerator is broken. Like, no, the refrigerator doesn't cool instantly. And we want to be able to say, hey, the refrigerator has been at this temperature. And when you put your groceries in it, it rose, but it's going to cool it back down. We wanted to play with water sensors around some of the areas prone to flooding. And the other big one, and we never figured this one out, is I wanted something there in the house to connect to Wi-Fi, or in the unit to connect to Wi-Fi. And that was just going to be our way to know that that thing was connected to Wi-Fi using the password that we have on file. So that way, when someone would call, we would be able to say, no, it's there. We can still see active. We can still see that it's active. Or say, no, there may be something wrong because our device there isn't connecting. So I saw kind of a large opportunity for this tech in this space. Now, again, we had a lot of dreams. We didn't get there. And quite honestly, we've never used the sensors, but I can tell you there's 100+ times that I wish we would have had sensors in place, because I think it would have resolved things in a much better, more practical and customer friendly way. Mm-hmm.
So I'll jump in, because I think that there's value in touching on a couple of those pieces, because that was sort of the start of smart home in the vacation rental space, really kind of in the hospitality space. And the points that Scott is making are valuable from an operational perspective. The challenge is that there are a lot of components to that from a design perspective, from a product development perspective, and then from a cost perspective on the using side. And each step in that process has some diminishing returns. So while there is an opportunity for each one of those benefits on the end user to say, hey, Mr. Guest, you know, the fridge is fine, I checked the temp. Or, hey, I'm just going to reset the Wi-Fi real quick so that it does it by itself. All of those things are huge from a customer services perspective. But to get to the point of use case and proving that use case out through the design, through the product development, out the other side at a cost that is actually effective for the end user, we just couldn't get there. And part of that comes from a really big infrastructure within alarm.com that has the design teams, that has the development teams, that has the product development teams. But in addition to that, you've got to get attention, because we're still a little bit of a niche industry, even though we've grown so much. If you think about, at least in alarm.com's world, if you think about their focus, they're focused on residential, so end users. And then this leads me into one last point, and then I'll pass it on. But it's hard to get the attention of the right people to focus all of those pieces together on one small niche. And then in addition to that, then you get to the scaling side of things. So all of those pieces have to come together, and then you have to figure out how to scale that in a way that the ecosystem will not break, which each one of these nodes, each one of these different pieces of that system has the potential to break the entire ecosystem at any time. And that's why when I look back on my time in that smart home space, I'm really glad that I was in it when I was in it, because as I look back on it, and this is why I'm really interested in Neil's focus with Minute, is I almost feel like specializing and being really good and going really deep in one area probably makes some more sense at scale. But I don't know. I mean, I think that Point Central has developed and Alarm.com has developed a lot since the time I left, but I still see challenge at scale. Hmm.
Wait, maybe then the 2 follow-up questions on those idea, Nils. Maybe the first being, the problem that you're solving, is it a relatively fixed scope problem? Like you mentioned kind of this idea. I guess my perception from afar is that it's mostly around noise monitoring and those kind of elements, but maybe you could expand more on like what the product does fully. That'll be one side of it. And then the second side of it, yeah, is Adam's point of scale. How do you get these devices in as many properties as possible, deliver that for a reasonable cost so people want to do it, but also you need to make money. It needs to be a profitable business model so you can keep doing it.
Yeah, I think I agree with what everyone has said here. Like, it's a lot of work to bring a product to market. And how big the market is sort of a shorthand for how much time and money you can actually spend to get something there, right? Like, so that's why you can spend so much resources on making a new Apple or Google product, because you have such a wide user base. And that's really making the vacation rental market and regular consumer market quite different. So I don't even see Estlize as a smart home company. I see smart home as something that is for consumers, and it's about delivering enough value that our consumer would buy it, but they're not going to make like a return on investment calculation. They're going to look at these things a little bit like gadget, and they say, okay, what is it worth to me that, you know, the beer is the right temperature in the fridge, right? That is very different from how a professional operator in the vacation rental space is working. They need to get positive ROI out of everything that they are paying for. And so the combination of those two things, you've got a much smaller market, and you need to provide a positive ROI to the customer. That, I think, really limits the types of products that you can bring to market. Like, all of these things that we were talking about is possible. And every day I probably hear about the new use case where a vacation rental professional say, hey, like, can you monitor the pool for me? Can you, you know, make sure that my robotic lawnmower is moving? Like all these things you can do, but how many of them can you find someone that is not only willing to pay for it, but willing to pay on a recurring basis so that you can continue to provide that service? So when we started out, like, we maybe started a little bit broader than we are today. We did a Kickstarter campaign, and we sort of had three different use cases, where one was around noise monitoring and party prevention. Another one was more sort of about the health of the property and making sure the property was taken care of. And then the other was a bit more a security use case. And the one where we found the biggest willingness to pay was around noise monitoring and occupancy monitoring. And that's sort of what led us on that route. And the driving factors, I think, can be quite generalized to other applications. And I'm sure there were others there. But in the stage we were at, it made a lot of sense to make a product where it would almost be a no-brainer for a vacation rental manager to have it, because it would cost them more in unauthorized parties and property damage than not to have it. Whereas many of the other benefits that you were describing are real benefits, but they're so much harder to measure. But that was sort of like the first stage of the company, right? Like, that's the vehicle, you will, to bring something to market, get infrastructure up. As you mentioned, like, once you have, you know, a backend that can serve a lot of different types of sensors, and we have, you know, tens of thousands out there today. Once you have that, the incremental cost to broaden that product aperture is a lot smaller. So once you have that foothold, then you can start innovating on more things. And that's how we have gone from being like very focused on noise monitoring to last year we were adding, or the year before actually, we added occupancy monitoring as another feature. We didn't charge any extra for it. We just added it to all of our customers. Last year, we released cigarette smoke detection, again, like as a sort of an additional feature. We didn't ask for any extra money. And that way, you're sort of creating more and more value to the customer, and you are making a broader and broader product. So I found the comparison to Point Central very interesting, because, like, if I, and tell me if I'm wrong here, but like, if I look at that approach, it was more about building the software that would tie existing sensors together and sort of build like an ecosystem type product. We've taken a different approach where we built a very vertically integrated product, and then we're broadening it. But in the end, you might actually end up not in the same place, but in a bit similar places, and provide the same type of services to vacation rental professionals.
Yeah, and I think the difference, and you nailed it, Nils, that's exactly right. I think the difference is that Point Central was coming out of Alarm.com, and Alarm.com already had an established infrastructure. So they already had a lot of these products out there on the residential side. We were trying to, in essence, take residential products and then bring them into a commercial space with vacation rentals. And then we were early in developing the software in order to use this on an enterprise level, to do this at scale. But it still comes with all the same problems that you mentioned: getting the right attention, getting the right teams, building out the products. I think, and my take when I left was, I think one of the hardest parts of this, and this is, I think, the benefit of specializing, is the hardware side of it. I think that trying to develop hardware, trying to deploy hardware, trying to maintain hardware is very costly for everybody involved, from the people that are designing and deploying it all the way to the end users. There's always going to be a flux. And we know this. We're buying new phones all the time. We're getting new computers. The same thing applies for connected devices. I think you're right, Nils, that I wouldn't put Minute necessarily in smart home. Maybe I think about it more as like a connected device ecosystem. But each one of these products is going to need to be maintained and updated over time. And I don't necessarily think, at least back in 2012 when we were starting, the end users weren't thinking about that. And we weren't necessarily coming out and saying that. So I think there was a surprise, or continues to be a surprise, that, oh, wow, this is a continued cost. It's not even just the reoccurring cost in the monthly, but the hardware, the maintenance of the hardware is going to cost something as well.
Right. And I think with the hardware, there's another point, which is privacy. So we've developed hardware that is, you know, specifically made to preserve the guest privacy. That is something that you don't really get if you take an off-the-shelf consumer product. And with good reason, because if you are developing a consumer product, what you're trying to do is, you know, get sort of the highest accuracy voice recognition, for example. That is completely in opposition to preserving privacy at home. So you're never going to get like the specialized hardware that you need to really get permission to have a broad deployment across hospitality by using the consumer type hardware. And that again goes back to, like, you know, how much value are you producing for the customer? Is that able to sustain all of this, not just the, you know, building the widget and sending it, but like thinking about the next generation and making sure that this thing works, you know, 7 years from now? Those are all pretty difficult questions, which I think explains why there are not that many startups around that do hardware for vacation rentals. I think there's good reason for it.
Yeah, it's. I mean, really, there's like multiple problems that you're solving, I guess, is the way to think about it, right? You have to like find the right problem that people are willing to pay for. You've got to build a thing, you know, from a hardware perspective that gets that problem solved effectively. And then you've got to, maybe this is the hard part too, from like a marketing positioning standpoint, I would imagine too, a little bit, Nils, convince people to pay for it and then convince them to, hey, if this does eventually kind of become hardware that you have to replace X number of years from now, you've got to rip that thing out the wall and put something new into the property. There was a company recently that seemed to kind of have folded in our space. I don't know if you followed this one at all, Nils, Guess You Guide. They had this like physical hardware tablet that was like attached inside the vacation rental property, kind of meant to be like a guidebook type product. Some of the ones that I guess have won, if we're using that terminology, are the ones that more so are like a link that you get sent on your phone. It's like a progressive web app. In other words, no hardware, just let me send you a link, and those guidebook products seem to be doing better. So it's like, that was done by a very large company. Sharp was kind of behind that, and they're like a $1 billion company. And it seemed like the product was like well reviewed, but it was just hard to convince people, from what I could tell from afar. It was hard to convince people to like make that step of like going into their vacation rental, putting that actual hardware in the property, and then kind of, I guess, seeding their guidebook over to that hardware. So I don't know if you have any thoughts on like, what's an effective way to convince more people to leverage these tools? Is it just making it so useful that you kind of can't see your life without it? Back to like Scott's comments earlier, or what are kind of some of the ways that you see that you've solved that problem and been able to deploy these devices effectively?
There's a couple of aspects to that question. I would say one is, you know, never build hardware to solve a software problem. And I think, you know, guidebooks and that sort of thing is a software problem.
Yeah.
Because everyone is carrying with them, you know, a fantastic screen that they are switching out every 2 years. And you're not going to be able to compete with that with fixed tablet. That's my opinion. You know, maybe someone will be wrong one day.
Yeah, I think the market agrees with you.
But I think there is a second part of it, which has to do with designing for many stakeholders, right? Like, so here we are talking not just about what value is it to the host or the vacation rental manager, but also to the guest. And in a way, actually, to the OTA or the booking agent, where everyone is sort of incentivized to make sure that the guest has a great experience. And that is one thing that I find very interesting about this industry, that you have to design products not just with the customer in mind, but also the customer's customer and the different stakeholders. So one thing that I really like is the connection to the community and the neighbors. Like, we need to start seeing those as stakeholders. And again, one of the things that was really beneficial to Minute in the early growth phase was when neighbors were starting to be more concerned about short-term rentals and especially noise issues. And I found that very, very fascinating, because it had this like trifecta between the community that we're operating in, the hosts and the guests. And again, like, if you were to develop a consumer product, you probably only think about the person who is paying. Whereas in this case, we sort of have to triangulate all of these. And I think the one that we are, where there is still more work to do, and you're touching on this, is really about the guests. And I think there is a lot more work we can do to sort of leverage the data that we have to provide a better hospitality experience. And that's something that I think Nico at BW, like, I think they're doing a really good job, because they are trying to be the sort of five-star hospitality experience. And if you think traditionally about five star, it's about realizing what the guest needs before they themselves have sort of talked about it or mentioned it. And that's a lot driven by intuition, but your intuition gets a whole lot better when you have data to support it. And I think that's another area where our industry can really push things a bit further. Like, how do we leverage this data that the sensors are producing when solving sort of the issue around noise and occupancy and other types of problems? How do you leverage that to actually make the guest have a much better experience? That, I think, is an interesting question.
Go ahead, Scott. I was going to say you were alluding to that perfectly, I think, earlier with your proactive messaging around the fridge and stuff like that.
Well, now I recall, and I don't know that Adam knew, so I don't know the timing, but we actually used noise sensors for a while, but we did it with real purpose. Now, we had an issue and we solved it with the noise sensors, but I'm fairly certain we pulled them back after we won. So it was, we've got a community that we're in up in Pennsylvania. There's a permanent resident above us, and that resident does not like short-term rentals. So they were causing all kind of trouble for the guests, right? I mean, ultimately, first for the guests and then for us. And saying that there was loud parties and there was loud noise. So we actually brought those sensors in, to prove the owner above us wrong. And we were able to bring that data to the HOA to say, no, it's untrue. Here's the actual, here it all is. Here's exactly where the decibels were during this time. Again, for us, it was, we used it to solve a problem. And really, it was a guest-facing problem because the guests were having issues with the neighbor upstairs. So we did put the guests first. But again, we brought it in, used it, and then I think we've since removed it. But it was done very purposely. And again, it was kind of an everyone win scenario, but really it was for the guest because the neighbor would complain and then we're then having to engage with this guest and disrupt their vacation to say, hey, you were too loud last night or whatever it was. So we still did use it guest forward, probably just not in the exact perfect setup for a company that's trying to charge it as recurring revenue. But again, I would say I can see the value as recurring revenue. I'm not diminishing the value as recurring revenue. You look, and Adam kind of grinned when Neil said this, it's all about data, right? If you can sit down and have all that data and be able to look at it and say, man, we have this, we have everything touched here and we know how everything's going, I think that all builds to the best guest experience.
I was going to your direction on that same question, I guess, then, Adam, right? How do we use these devices in an enhancing way, like Dills was alluding to, providing better hospitality? Because, you know, I'm thinking too of, like, as a guest, if I was in the unit next to yours, like in Bob W., where they do these kind of service department style things where I'm next to you, I don't want you smoking necessarily if it's a non-smoking building, right? So it is thinking of the guest, if that guest is being selfish and over-occupying the unit, being loud and stuff like that, and I'm right next to him or her, I don't want to be dealing with that. So I guess, Adam, that's kind of a framing question, but how do you see that as a way that these devices are data collection tools in some respect, obviously, privacy first, as Nils alluded to, but we have to use them in a more positive way than just policing, you know, that sort of thing.
I think that's been the vision since the beginning. At least that was the way that I approached when I left the management side of things and moved over into the vendor side of Point Central, and then on to Breezeway after that. My focus of looking at these products was around operations, but it wasn't around me as the operator. It was more around that guest experience. So I came out of the marketing space, so I was already focused on that guest experience side. So when I went to Point Central and then moved on to Breezeway, both of those were focused on how can we improve the guest experience by improving operations. So as we make operations more seamless, as we automate a lot of this, and some of that is communication, some of that, to Neil's point, is knowing what the guest wants before they get it, timing the guest guide at the right time, giving them the directions to the property, whatever that might be, automating those steps that make sense to that guest to improve that guest experience. I think that's what the vision is for all of these connected devices from the very beginning. The challenge is to get from deployment and then move through all of those stages to a place where you can then actually count on it to happen in a way that it actually is enhancing the guest experience. Because the drawback of that is that you detract from the guest experience if it doesn't work the way it's supposed to. So what used to be a manual effort and was a pain and it wasn't the best guest experience now looks better because you made it even worse with the technology that you put in place. So I do think it's a matter of having the vision and then figuring out how to walk down the path to make it sustainable. And that's why I continue to go back to the scale side of things, because that is where things start to break down. it's easy to make your house run with connected devices because you're there and you can look at them and you can fix them. When you start to go to 5 and 10 and 500 and 5,000, that's exponentially more difficult to make that work. But the impact on the guest side is still the same. If you get a small portion of 5,000 to not have a good guest experience, well, that's still not worth deploying. So you really, you don't have to be perfect, but you got to be pretty darn close to perfect if you're going to deploy this type of technology.
Yeah, it needs to fail in a good way. Like, I think that's something that people don't think about. Like, but we have customers that are really relying on our APIs to get their guest messaging and other aspects really to work. So one, the first step is obviously to make sure that you get to an extraordinarily high reliability, which you don't really need in the consumer space. And I'm proud to say that we're in the, deep in the nines in terms of the uptime of our API. But the second part is that it's actually to think through what happens when it doesn't work. Things typically need to work pretty well offline as well. So Wi-Fi, for example, does not have the reliability that you need in running at that scale for 5,000. So you need to think about what happens when Wi-Fi goes down. And in our case, like, you know, the sensor is supposed to connect to the backend at a regular interval. And if it can't do that, then we know that the Wi-Fi is down. And then that's another aspect. Like, okay, what happens then? Well, of course, you need to tell the host. When you get to these, like, you know, whenever you add, you go from your 50 units to your 500 to your 5,000, like, there is a lot of these things that you never saw before. They're starting to come out of the woodwork. And I think that's also like an interesting challenge in sort of like thinking through all of these steps and making sure that all of the corner cases are covered.
Yeah. Well, maybe we can go in a different direction then here, Nils, because it relates to what I think we've been talking about for the last few minutes, but it was a news item that you flagged for us. And as of recording, this will come out much later, but as of our recording, this came out yesterday, it appears, of Airbnb, right? One of the largest platforms, obviously, that we have here, banning interior cameras is kind of how I read it, according to this article. We'll put this article, by the way, in the show notes. If you haven't seen the official one, you can go read that. I saw your summary here on LinkedIn. Maybe you could like kind of break down this news item, what it means from Airbnb, and then you could talk a little bit about the privacy elements and some of the ways that your devices that you guys have built don't kind of run afoul of any sort of camera type, you know, bans or anything like that from Airbnb.
Yeah, it's probably no surprise that we're quite happy to see this, right? Like when we started the company, like this, I would say like one of the most important reasons was like how guests hate cameras. You don't want a camera in your living room. It changes how you behave. It changes how your perception of that space. And up until now, the policy had been that it's okay to put cameras indoors as long as you disclose them. And we've always thought that was wrong. It's hard to expect guests to read every letter on the listing. And I think a basic expectation when you're staying somewhere is that your privacy should be protected. And so we're very happy to see that the rules are changing in this direction and that the community is starting to take guest privacy and guest safety a bit more seriously. So it's not a huge update. They just are banning indoor cameras as of April 30th. Of course, instead, we hope that hosts adopt privacy-safe technologies like Minute. We can solve many of the same issues and many times actually in a better way. Like those cameras, I think, were a lot of false security. You have to monitor them. So you had a product that wasn't really fit for purpose, that had a detrimental impact on the guests, and where I think there are just better solutions out there. So we're pretty happy to see it. But the big change is that the indoor cameras are not allowed, and there are disclosure rules for privacy-safe devices like Minute as well. So you should see it on the listings. It should be specific. It's not actually launched yet. It's not actually live. So we're not 100% sure how it would look like. But it should be clear to any guest that is booking that there is a Minute sensor installed in the property, which is actually solving most issues in the first place, because the guest who is about to throw a big party is not going to do it in a property with noise monitoring installed. So yeah, we're very happy to see this change, and I think it's part of the industry maturing. I think it's taking guest safety a bit more seriously, and I think there is more things we can do in that direction. But now that we've got our way on this one, we'll start working on the next.
Yeah. Scott, I was curious, any reaction on your side to this idea? I mean, I can't imagine there's many large property managers that are going through the effort and headache of installing interior cameras, even if they were trying to disclose those. I do see the odd exterior camera on certain properties, but I feel like that's often homeowner driven. Correct me if I'm wrong on that, as opposed to property manager driven, is kind of in my view of it. But
yeah, I couldn't even fathom either managing a place with a camera inside or staying at a place with a camera inside. Like, I can't even fathom it. I mean, quite honestly, and this is a true story, we have a family cabin that we own and share in Murphy, North Carolina. And there's cameras all the way around. There's exterior cameras, there's interior cameras. But those cameras are there for when no one's there. When someone goes, the cameras all get shut down while we're there, right? And then we'll bring it back online. So even you know, internally, family, not in the vacation rental mode, that's how we handle it. But yeah, Conrad, to your point, and I think we've talked about, we have a Del Mar owner that she had, and it's an owner-based camera. She's got the Nest out front. And her ask was that at check-in time, the family all grouped together in front of the Nest camera so she could do her quick count and see who was staying at her property, which we're not doing that. But it's that thought process. And again, it's some way to scrape for, oh, I'm going to resolve this thing that could potentially be a problem. And, you know, to Neil's point, there's far better ways to do it. And there's ways that aren't intrusive at all. And they're not, they'll flag what needs to be flagged and it can be handled. And it's not at the kind of the expense of someone's privacy. And quite honestly, I can't even imagine having to watch video of someone else living their life in this property and then trying to piece it all together. Like, it's all bad. I like the minute solution, and we should all move there quickly.
So I've got a few different feelings on this, and I land in Neil's camp ultimately. But first of all, I think that there is still this draw, especially from a homeowner side of things, for the outdoor cameras. And, you know, my perspective of that is, if you've got in the rental pool, we just have to trust the rental managers or the host or whoever's doing it and have faith that the 99.9% of the guests that go into your home are still good people doing the right thing. So I don't think the value of trying to see if it's a family group or a group of young people, I just don't think it's the value of losing the trust of the guest on that in their first check-in. I don't think is the value there. But if I take a step back to 2012 when I was getting into Point Central, I want to stress, because I don't think this one's talked enough about, but I do think that we've taken strong steps in the right direction. We talk about safety in this industry. We don't talk about security very much. And Scott just nailed it. It's when the home is empty, right? There's a security problem in this industry as well. And it used to be much bigger because we'd have thousands of keys floating all over the place that no one would have any indication, and there would be copies and people could come and go as they want. Now we at least have a lot of keyless access where most of the time we can track who's coming and going. But there's still a security issue, especially when it's vacant, of trying to understand who's there. So in 2012, we actually introduced what we called an image sensor. And we connected it to the software so that we knew when the home was vacant, so that it would only turn on when the home was vacant based on the reservations. And it would snap a picture. So it wasn't just the sensor to give you an alert to say, hey, somebody's in the property. It would actually snap a picture and you get a picture of who is in that property. Guests hated it, to Neil's point. There was no question. We had guests that would take it to the vacation rental manager's office, throw it on the floor and stomp on it and break it in front of the manager. Like, it was not going to happen. But the reality is that there was benefit to the vacation rental manager and the homeowner to have some peace of mind. Now, the other part I would mention around that is, what are you going to do with that information, right? What is that property manager going to do when they know that somebody's in their house at midnight on a Tuesday and no one's around? Are you going to send somebody there? Are you going to call the police? The police don't even have the necessity to go down there unless you can tell them you're at the property, you can see somebody in the property. So I don't even know that we're solving it with that. I, at the end, land in Nils' camp. And at the time, noise monitoring wasn't a thing. It wasn't an option back in 2012. But I agree. I think that having a peace of mind of knowing that you can send something and get the information to a party who can act, I see a lot of value in that from a security perspective. It also maintains the privacy. At the end of the day, I don't think there's any place for cameras in vacation rentals. I just don't think it's the right mix.
Yeah.
I think even the security issue is better solved with these type of privacy safe technology. Like, we have no problem with detecting motion in an empty property, and you can sync it with your calendar. So you can get a alarm when there is not supposed to be a guest, and then it's turned off when there is supposed to be a cleaner or a guest in the property. It doesn't require cameras. Like, you can solve these issues without intruding on guest privacy. And I don't see what the excuse would be to sacrifice guest privacy when you don't need to. So that's my view on the security. On the safety, I actually think this industry has a little bit more to do. I don't know if you do this. Maybe this is something that you get a bit damaged from being in the industry for too long. But I always check out the fire and gas alarms when I stay in a short-term rental. professional managers tend to deal with it well, but I'm going to say that in a good half of the times when I'm expecting there to be a fully functioning gas alarm or fire alarm, and usually that has been on the listing that is the case, it's not functioning. Either because there has been a guest tampered with it, because they think it's going to detect their cigarette smoke, so they might have taken it down, or batteries have run out. No one is really like has it on their long list of things to do to check it out. And there, I think there is more we could do to really elevate the guest safety to the same level that you would expect in a resort or in a hotel. And there, I think there is still some room for improvement. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, we've had some different safety people on the show before, Nils. Eric Thibodeau comes to mind in our industry as the Justin Ford. I mean, these are people I think who have done a lot of education and training and things like that. I know what both of them struggled with, Eric specifically, because we talked about it recently, is people will say they care and then they don't do anything about it. So there's almost this like gap of, I don't know, it's like flossing. Like, how do we get people to floss if they don't want to floss? I don't know what the answer is to that. As someone that gets told by the dentist they should floss and that doesn't floss, maybe I'm part of the problem a little bit. But I feel like that's kind of the gap there. But maybe to your company and what you focus on, Nils, maybe it's a technology consideration where if we can have one or two devices that handle multiple things as you've been able to kind of build that type of technology, maybe that's the key, is that we can have one thing that solves multiple problems and we're not going and installing a separate smoke detector, a separate carbon monoxide, a separate, you know, this and that sort of thing. And so it makes it easier for people to comply or be more safety conscious or safety focused, because there's just less things for them to do. As to your point, there's 50 things that are on their to-do list, and this may not be the top priority until it is, right? Until something, you know, does happen, unfortunately, which can be an issue.
Yeah, I think there are two aspects to it. There is the making it really frictionless and easy. Mm-hmm. And that is obviously something one should do regardless. The other is a little bit of accountability. I probably wouldn't floss if it wasn't for my dentist, but, you know,
checking on you.
I know that I got to go and see her a couple times a year. And if I haven't flossed, I'm going to get a talking to. And that is like that little accountability that you need. And I think there can be something a bit similar here. I'm not talking that needs to be very heavy handed regulation, but if you look at sort of the regulation that hotels have to deal with, and then the regulation that residential spaces have to deal with, you know, maybe there's a middle ground where there is a higher degree of safety expected than you would in a regular home, maybe more frequent testing, you know, maybe connected devices could be part of that. And then once you get that in place, I'm pretty sure that the industry will provide these solutions. It will provide things that are easy and affordable and helps people be in compliance without too much work.
Yeah, and I would definitely double down on that accountability. And I would share accountability, to your point, Nils, right? An inspector, the property manager, the homeowner, because again, to Nils' point, that the market will give the end user what they want if the end user proves that they'll pay for it and the product is valuable. Again, stretching back a number of years, but early in my Point Central days, we were going down the path of connected smoke and CO2. The challenge at that time was liability was super high, because if you're going to, again, residential versus commercial. Residential, it's not that high because it's connected to a central call station who will be alerted and it's one home. But if you extrapolate this on a commercial basis at scale, liability is huge for the connected devices, because now if those connected devices are down, even if it's, to Nils' point, it's 99.9%. up, but you hit that, you know, 10th of a percentage point. Well, now there's a huge lawsuit because someone died because your connected device wasn't connected. So they all backed off it, the alarm.com. And I think really everybody in the industry at that point backed off. Whereas if you have multiple levels of accountability, I think then you could get the products back into a place where they would be okay with sharing some of that liability. It shouldn't all fall in one place. The inspector had to be there. The property manager had to be there. The connected device had to be there. I would say where that makes sense. And to your point, Neil, safety is a huge opportunity for this industry. In fact, it's an absolute necessity for us to get it right. And we have not gotten it right. To your point, 50% of those places not having smoke detectors up and running, I mean, clearly unacceptable from an industry perspective.
Yep. Yeah, and that's not a data point. That's my own research. We're actually trying to find some.
Yeah. And I think you guys both highlighted it well. If people aren't back there enforcing it, then there's not really much incentive for anyone to, you know, fix it, right? Like, until something bad happens, people will just ignore it. And then if there's not accountability or, you know, consequences, so to speak, I mean, I hate to think about it that way, but there has to be kind of some reinforcement mechanism for these things to occur. you know, for it to be successful. Well, I know we're coming up against it a little bit here time-wise, Nils. I want to be respectful of your time that you shared here and jumping on. We really do appreciate it. We have one guest that we've, or one question, excuse me, that we've been asking people, Freudian slip there, that we've been asking people, and that's kind of how you ended up on the show here, which is that we're asking people we're interviewing if they have anyone in mind that maybe that we could also interview down the road. Is there a future guest that maybe could talk about whether it's technology or marketing or anything as it relates to vacation rental industry, you know, hospitality? It's a topic that we're obviously deeply interested in. Anyone that comes to mind for you that maybe would be a good fit for us?
Yeah, I was going to suggest Lorraine at Rentable.
Okay.
So they are working to make the industry a lot more accessible and bring an inventory online that works for people with different accessibility needs. And I think that is something where, again, like there is a bit of a gap between the very, very professional managers and what the short-term rental industry is providing. And I think she's doing, and her organization, I should say, is doing a terrific job of bringing that inventory online. So I would encourage you to reach out to her.
Nice.
I love that suggestion for multiple reasons. One, because I think it's a huge gap in the industry. And I guess in the future, we might have to start asking for people to have a list of three or four guests that they're ready to recommend because we're talking with Lorraine on Friday.
No, that's perfect though. Well, it's reinforcement, Nils, that, you know, Adam is doing a good job of doing all the scheduling work when we get multiple, you know, kind of bumps on the same individual. And I agree, definitely an important topic and one that's, you know, closer to me recently because a family member now is someone who might need that type of accessibility, you know, requirements. And it would be challenging for this person to go and stay in a lot of places that just don't have that option. So that does make a lot of sense. Well, Scott, Adam, anything else? We should maybe take some parting shots at Nils before we let him go, or any, what else do you guys gentlemen have on your side?
I love it. Awesome conversation and just, you know, thankful, right? From Nico to Nils here, just incredibly thankful. And I'll tell you, the whatever they have going on over there, when we release an episode that includes someone from their side of the world, it just blows up.
We do. I noticed that with Nico.
Yeah. So so we're just excited to get to be a part of their story and hopefully you guys have been a part of our story as we move forward.
Yeah, no, I agree. I think that I wasn't expecting us to go, which I guess hindsight is 2020. I probably should have, but I wasn't expecting us to go quite as deep on the smart home connected device side. I was expecting us to maybe talk a little bit more industry and about that European market. To Scott's point, I am still very curious about that European market. But I think, to as Conrad mentions, if we don't get through the outline, that means it's a pretty darn good conversation. So it was a great conversation. We'll have to have you back, Nils. I think there's still a lot more for us to talk about.
Yeah, thank you so much for having me. And it was great to hear the Point Central background. I would love to hear that story in great detail another time.
Well, I'm well beyond the non-compete. So at any point, if you want to chat, I'll chat in the chat.
That's code for I'll spill all the secrets. Why not? Let's have some fun with it.
Actually, what that means is I have zero secrets because it's been too long.
Right. That could also be the case.
I think the companies are different enough that it wouldn't be competitive. On the other hand, I would rather see it as a potential partnership.
100%.
Yeah, I would agree with that. I'm always happy to chat. I still am very passionate about it. I still see a lot of value in the work that you guys are doing.
Yeah. Absolutely. Well, awesome. Yeah. Thanks so much for your time. Again, I'm recording with us here today. Nils, we really appreciate it. We'll pop some links in the show notes. Obviously, people can check out what's going on, you know, at Minute. They can obviously, you know, look at more what the product does, what the solution is, you know, reach out. It sounds like there's, from what I can tell, the website, very straightforward for people to kind of pick up the product and put it into their properties. Hopefully we can send some people your way. And thanks again for recording with us. We thank you so much. And we'll catch everybody on the next show. I forgot to ask for reviews. My last thing, you made it this far. You made it all the way to the end, even past my little outro, and you haven't left us a review. We greatly appreciate a review. So again, that's my last request here. And we'll catch everybody in the next episode of Art of Hospitality. Thanks so much.